Bibles to the book of Philippians. We're going to start there and going to read in chapter number 3. A few verses just to get started tonight. I appreciate everybody coming out, and I hope you got something out of it or getting something out of it. We're going to try to go a little bit further tonight, and I hope it'll be a challenge to us and encouragement to us. We're going to start Philippians chapter 3 and verse number 14. Would it help if I'd done that, Brother Trent? Okay. Philippians chapter 3 and verse number 14. And the Bible said, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Let us therefore, as many as be perfect, be thus minded, and if in anything ye be otherwise minded, God shall reveal even this unto you. Nevertheless, whereto we have already attained, let us walk by the same rule, let us mind the same thing. Brethren, be followers together of me, and mark them which walk so as ye have us for an ensample. And so what Paul was telling the church at Philippi there, he said, brethren, be followers together of me and mark them which walk so as ye have us for an ensample. And so Paul said, follow me. And what he's saying there, others that are worthy of following, mark them, follow after them. And so we started talking last night about the pastors that have worked in this area in days gone by. And I got to thinking about this, how that there have been great examples for us. And they're worthy of following after. Now, none of these men were perfect. And even Brother Eggers in that book, when he talks about that the only people that don't make mistakes are those that have gone on to the grave. You know, nobody's perfect. Everybody makes mistakes. So we're not holding up and saying that these men were perfect by any means, but they're certainly worth noting or marking as being a good example. And I looked up that word ensample. It means this, an example, a pattern or model for imitation. So to model ourselves after. There's some things in their lives that we could imitate. I used the book last night by Robey Eggers about 50 years in service for Christ. And anytime, you know, like our little book, you get this little book and read it or something like this, you ought to get something out of it. You ought to get something out of it, not just read, just for reading's sake. Knowledge that's not used is useless. You know, if we learn something and we don't take it and use it or apply it to our lives, then what good is it? And so I want to pick out some useful things as far as being examples. And as I've studied and looked at church history, there's a lot of things that we could learn from it or do learn from it. But what has impressed me the most is their faithfulness, how faithful they were in what they did. I mean, and what they were doing, it was hard work. It was just hard to live, I would think, once upon a time. I mean, you had to struggle for everything you had, grow your food out of the ground, kill your own meat and all kinds of things like that. Harder life than we live today. And so on top of that, they also planted churches, raised their families, took them to church, went to church, went to revivals, all of these things. And so that's what I've taken away from it in my personal study. I've been impressed by their faithfulness. And I'm just going to share some things about that tonight, about faithfulness. I was reading in one of the history books, and it was talking about the history of the churches, and a lot of times they had great revivals. They'd have 20, 30 people saved. Wasn't unusual for them to have times like that. But in one of those books, it also said, but there were lean years also. And so when we look back at history, you know, you tend to put it and say, you know, people say, boy, those were the good old days. But they had lean years just like we have lean years. In fact, I thought about we could compare it to Vacation Bible School. We've not had as many this year as we have in years gone by. And I noticed that the first night, the second night. Other people have noticed, whether it's people going on vacation or whatever the case might be, I don't know. But I thought about this. How many would we have to make it worthwhile? You know, how many children are important? One. How many children are worth it? Worth all the expense? One of them. So the thing to learn from that is to be faithful in the lean times. And so we don't have as many. Next year we might have double. We don't know. You know, but we got to be, we learn from our forefathers. Be faithful with the little. And God will give you a little bit more. So we don't have as much. What are we going to do? There ain't nothing we can do about it. But just be faithful with what we've got. And so that's how they were. They were faithful with a little and they were faithful with a lot. A phrase that Robey Eggers uses in this book, he'll talk about something and he'll say whether they were having a revival or they were trying to build a church somewhere, he would say, but even this was not without difficulty. You know, anything you try to do for the Lord, the devil's going to come along and he's going to try to mess it up. And so even though we have difficulty, we need to keep on being faithful. And so I just got to studying about this and thinking about being faithful. It said in one of the books about the first pastors at Three Forks, it said they earned their bread in the sweat of their faces and worked in the master's vineyard without money and without price. Look in our Mount Lebanon book on page number 7. There's a little story in there about them trying to have revival here, and I don't know who the pastor was. It doesn't say. But this is an interesting story. If you think about the second paragraph there, where it says Sister Thelma Earp. It says Sister Thelma Earp. Is that Brother Ralph's mom? His mama's mom?
Yeah.
Okay.
No. My mama's. She raised my mom.
Okay.
John Earp and Thelma Earp.
Okay.
Ella was Ralph's mom.
Okay. Sister Thelma Earp, who was 97 years old at the time, remembered a revival meeting in which the pastor asked the people to pray for someone to come and help him in the services. Sister Mary McGinnis and four other sisters met at the schoolhouse to pray. Now, we was talking last night, we said something about the ladies and the part that they played. And so these ladies got together at the schoolhouse to pray. About 20 miles away in the Bethel community, Brother Farthing was working in the fields. The Lord spoke to him and told him to go to Mount Lebanon. He took his horse home and told his wife he was needed at Mount Lebanon. He was obedient to the Lord's call, and Mount Lebanon experienced a great revival. Now, can you imagine? That's, you know what that sounds like to me? Sounds like in Acts chapter number 8 when the angel of the Lord spoke to Philip and told him to go down into the desert. And he went at the bidding of the Lord, and he went and he found the Ethiopian down there, and he witnessed a one person. Can you imagine? And I hope we can imagine this, but that this man lived close enough to the Lord and people 20 miles away had enough confidence in prayer that they prayed that God would send somebody, and the Lord did. I mean,
my memory serves me correct. Ma said he left there, came to the Mount Lebanon. His wife didn't see him for 10 days.
And that's another thing I thought about. As a preacher, or some of you men, can you imagine? And it said that he put his horse up, he went to his house, told his wife he was needed at Mount Lebanon. Can you imagine going and telling your wife, honey, the Lord just spoke to me and I'm going to get the horse and I'm going over to Mount Lebanon 20 miles away. You'd have to have a pretty good woman. I mean, she could have said, the corn's got to be hoed. You know, work to be done. Who's going to milk the cows? Who's going to feed the animals? Who's going to do all that? So, faithfulness. And he just dropped everything. Has anybody else been extra busy this week? I mean, it takes effort just come out to Bible school. But can you imagine living that long ago? And what effort it would take to do anything. And so they were faithful. And I'm going to read with you, or I'm going to read a little bit. I'm going to try not to be too much, but I want to share with you some things out of this book. And several people have asked me about, I don't even know if you could get I doubt there's anywhere to get this book, but I'll let anybody read it that wants to. It doesn't take very long to read, but I want to share some things with you out of the book. I mentioned this last night about when they had the flu. But I've got, instead of points, I'm gonna say it like this. There's a lesson on faithfulness in times of danger. And he talks about when he got the flu up at Meat Camp. And he said, my second pastor, it was Elk Knob Church, called the Head of the River. The post office was Tamarack, North Carolina. This church was about 10 miles from where I live, across the Snake Mountain. The community was sometimes called Pottertown. And most everybody knows Pottertown, especially years ago, had a reputation of being a mean place, you know. Better be careful going up there. And I remember Preacher Arndt was pastor over there, and he had Preacher Carl come and preach revival for him. And so I went and hauled Preacher Carl up to Pottertown or Elk Knob. I'd never been up there, but I'd heard all these stories and everything. And so I'm driving Preacher Carl up there in his car, and he showed me where it was. I'd never been up there. He said, turn this thing back down the road in case we have to get out of here. And I'm driving you, and I said, are you being serious? Are you being serious? I still don't know to this day if he was being serious. You know how Preacher Carl was, but I turned the car and headed it back down the road. But that was Pottertown. He said, I was called to this church in September 1916 and served it 4 years and 6 months. I traveled on horseback part of the time and often walked to this church to fill my appointments. I would go up to the gap of the Rich Mountain, then take a pathway around this mountain and go through the gap of Elk Knob, and then down 2 miles to the church. I've led my horse and rode part of the way around this mountain trail. That would be... And see, what they had to do, I think Brother John Mark was asking me about how did they have church? When did they have church? They would have church on Saturday a lot of times. They'd have church on Saturday. They'd have their business on Saturday. If the preacher traveled that far, you know, they didn't just go to 11 o'clock service and that be done. But they'd have the preacher would come in. He'd have to spend the night with somebody. They would have church on Saturday. They'd have their business meeting on Saturday. Then on Sunday, they would have church, you know, Sunday school, preaching. It was, and you also keep in mind, the preacher was probably only coming once a month. And so that's sort of how they did things. And I was looking today, I went over to Forest Grove to mow. And I came home across Lost Ridge, and some of you might know where that is, but you get up there on the top of the mountain, you can see Tater Hill and Rich Mountain, and you can see all up through Zionville from one mountain peak to the other. And I pulled my truck over there and I sat there a minute. That is a vast mountain. I mean, and I could see, you know, about how he would have to go. And I'll tell you, I'd hate to have to take out on horseback, walk up that mountain, cross the mountain, and then I know where Pottertown is. That's a major undertaking. But they were faithful in times of danger. He talks about Elk Knob. He said, in this community, long before I served there, Brother L.A. Wilson lived and worked and organized Elk Knob Church. And that's Sister Shirley's great-grandpa. He preached there for years before he moved to Meat Camp. Brother Wilson was the old type of minister and did a great work in this county during the 40 years he preached and served churches. He says this, he said, I thank God that I could have part in helping this church in the early days of my work. My brother ministers, I love you and wish for you the best of everything. I have nothing to complain of or to boast about, but have you ever had your feet frozen in the stirrups as you traveled horseback? Have you ever ridden through the storms and rain in the dark nights while the lightning flashed and the thunders rolled? Have you ever had pneumonia away from home and could not go back to a wife and children you loved? And he had experienced all of these things. And so he's writing this book and he says to my fellow ministers, have you ever been through something like that? And he had. He'd had all those experiences. He said, I have something to rejoice about, though I'm the least of the preachers. And I wanted to say a little bit, talking about faithfulness in times of danger, about during the flu epidemic. You know, I could see in our day and time, if it was that bad, we may not even have church. You know, a lot of people wouldn't get out if there was a flu epidemic. And it wasn't people were running to the doctor. People were dying. I mean, it was bad. But he talks about being up at Meat Camp Baptist Church and having revival up there during the flu epidemic. He said, when I began work in 1917, the church seemed to be somewhat on the rocks. I traveled on horseback in those days. The roads were rough, the creeks were not bridged, and I crossed Meat Camp Creek 14 times to get to the church. The ice in the wintertime was hard to cross, and my shoes were frozen fast in the stirrups at times. And we're not talking about Gore-Tex boots either. I thought about that. I mean, what did they go in? Just old leather boots and homemade socks. And he said, one time near the gap of Rich Mountain, I was buried in a snowdrift. As I led the horse across, we both broke through and the horse's feet barely missed my head, but we got out without harm. I've gone to church through the snowstorms when the people did not think I would come, and I found no one there. We can have a little drizzle. But I wanted to share with you about what he said about having the flu. He said, Reverend L.A. Wilson was a faithful servant of God and stood by me in this great work, in prayers and in any other way he could, and so did many others. My experience in 1918, when the flu epidemic took so many lives, both in the U.S. Army and everywhere, I had been preaching for near 3 months in revivals. I went to Meat Camp late in November and we began a meeting there which ran for 2 weeks. There were about 20 people to be baptized. Now that's in late November. They're going to have revival and going to baptize people. Already several people were sick. And on Saturday, we postponed the night service. I had announced baptizing for Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, intending after service to go home. But Sunday morning, both myself and L.A. Wilson were sick. I stayed at his home that night. What a dark night that was. I could not sleep. I was worked down and worn out. I was not able to go home or to baptize either. Neither was Brother Wilson, for we both had the flu. I did not see him for 10 days in his own home. I took pneumonia and it almost got me. I lost 50 pounds in 5 weeks. I became so weak and lost so much blood from nosebleed that it seemed that something told me that if I didn't get better, I couldn't live. Then the next night, I saw the angels, 7 of them, sitting in my room. I did not know what they were seated on. I said, "Who are these?" And a voice said, "These are guardian angels." I said, "I've read about them, but have never seen them before." That was very real, but was only a vision. I noticed that the old oil lamp seemed to be going out, yet there was plenty of oil in it. This I did not understand, but just a little later, Dr. Roby Blackburn came in and gave me medicine quickly. Then I understood that it was myself going out instead of the lamp. He said, so I prayed if I could bring glory to God to let me live for two reasons. First, to preach His gospel, and second, to help raise my children. If for these two reasons He would grant my request, I would try to preach better and try to do more for Him. I'm sure He answered that prayer. Then he said, after a little while, I got so I could get up. I could see a covered wagon going down the road, and I knew that they were taking someone to the cemetery. In the spring, I held a memorial service for those which had passed away at the church. And then he said, in the spring, I was able to go back and finish up the revival meeting we had started the previous fall. You know, if we'd went through something like that, we might say, I don't think I want to go back up there. But he talks about being away from home, and his wife didn't know at first where, you know, he's supposed to be home at a certain day. And he couldn't go home. I don't know how he would have got word to his wife during a time like that, but faithfulness in times of danger. And so they could have easily, I guess, said, you know, we're not going to have revival, we're not going to do this, but it seemed to me like they just kept on keeping on. And so there's some lessons to learn from that about faithfulness in times of danger. And then there's also some lessons on faithfulness in times of discouragement. Now I'm going to read about a church that I know a little bit about, Brushy Fork. I grew up there. And it seemed like there's always something. I'm not being mean in saying that, but it seemed like there's always something sort of stirred up. And as I read about this, I guess there always was something sort of stirred up, because he's talking about being at Brushy Fork. But he says some good things, and then he says some discouraging things about it. He said, this church believed in the old-time gospel as the elder preachers had planted this church. And this is a church that D.C. Harmon also started. He started Brushy Fork in 1851, and then he started Mount Lebanon, or he was the first pastor at Mount Lebanon. So he refers to him, the elder preachers had planted this church. For the Bible tells that every plant which my heavenly Father has not planted shall be rooted up. He said, and he was called to pastor this church in July 1925. He said, we worked about 2 years before we could have a real revival meeting. He said, a revival is one thing and a protracted meeting is quite another. You know, we say that sometimes. We say we're going to have revival, but are we going to really have revival, or are we just going to have a meeting? And he said here that there's a difference between a revival and a protracted meeting, protracted, drawn out. He said a protracted meeting is a meeting of days without results. At such time, the church has an old mum feeling and somehow cannot pray. All faces are pale. All hearts go languishing in a lukewarm state. They have lost their first love, but Christ says, repent, or else I will come unto thee quickly. He said, there's one brother in that church who said, I will not forgive. I can't forgive. That's what he was up against. That's hard when you've got something like that in a church. It's discouraging. He said it took prayer and great patience. The mills of God grind slowly, but grind exceeding fine. But after a while, the revival spirit broke out, and many souls were saved, and the church began to grow in power and in numbers. He said, I wanted to lead this church not only to grow in numbers, but to make progress in the mission work. But it was greatly hindered. Can you imagine yourself trying to lead a flock of sheep from one field to a larger field into greener pasture? You have the gap in the fence laid down and the sheep are headed toward the gap. But just then someone comes up in the gap and begins hollering and throws his hat into the air. The sheep are scattered all over the field. Sometimes the person is a man and sometimes it is a woman. Then it takes the pastor a year or two to get them rounded up and started again. Church work is slow work. And that happens sometimes. You can be trying to get the church moving in a certain direction, and I love that illustration because I know what it is to lay down a gap in a fence, you know, and we're going to get them to go through, and boy, you almost got them through, and somebody does something and they run all over the place. You got to start all over again. That's a good illustration of how it is working in a church. And that's discouraging. It's discouraging. I have a preacher friend, and he's young, and he got called to a church, and he wanted to do some things right off the bat that needed to be done. But I told him, I said, brother, I said, you need to be there a while, because they're not going to follow you if you just walk in and you're going to change everything the first year you're there. I said, you can try it, but it takes a while. It takes a while. Sometimes it's discouraging. But he talks about they went on, they started again. They had some great revivals. They had a lot of souls saved. But even during discouraging times, we need to be faithful. Now, I grew up at Brushy Fork. And I can remember there was some, I don't even know a lot of it, what people was upset about sometimes or whatever. But I also remember this. I remember those times when the church had revival and the aisles were full and people were getting saved. And, I mean, it's a good church. It's a good church. They had some good preaching. That's where I was saved. So I'm thankful that somebody was faithful, even though there's discouraging times. Where would churches be if people didn't hang in there during discouraging times? If everybody just scattered like the sheep and everybody ran off and nobody be gathered together again, there wouldn't be any churches. All churches have discouraging times. All churches have lean times. And so thank the Lord for people that are faithful in dangerous times, discouraging times. He talks about two ministers that were called out of this church, Grady Minton and Brother A.C. Moody. And Grady Minton, some of you may remember him, may not, but he was, has a relation. His wife was Paul's sister. Okay, so he was uncle by marriage. Well, my Grandpa Greer knew him real good. And a couple of stories real quick I wanted to tell you about Grady Minton. And Dad might, I may not get it exactly right, but he was struck by lightning twice. Was it the same day? And the Lord was dealing with him about preaching, about surrendering to preach. And so he was over working in the field somewhere around over where I live now. And God's dealing with him about preaching the gospel. Well, he gets struck by lightning while he's out there working in the field. And, you know, like anybody else, I'd put a pretty good scare into you. Well, he decides to go home. And he's walking up sort of behind where I live now. He lived on the other side of the mountain. And he got up on that ridge somewhere and he was walking along and he got struck by lightning again. That time it knocked him down in the weeds. And laurel bushes. Did he lay there for, he didn't know how long? And so Preacher Carl, now I don't tell people this, but if you went to Preacher Carl and said, Preacher Carl, I think God's calling me to preach, what should I do? Preacher Carl would say, run from it as long as you can. I've heard him tell people that. I don't know about that. What if you're real hard-headed, like, you know, I don't want to get struck by lightning. I say, you know, if you feel like you got a burden to do it, you better do it. You might get struck by lightning. So after that, he surrendered to preaching. He started preaching.
What was odd
Yeah.
And they didn't know that story. Well, Daddy told me he was there.
Yeah.
He was using a, not a scythe, but a crowbar. And he hit the blade the first time. That's when he went home. And then it knocked him off in the laurel patch. He surrendered after that.
Yeah. They say three strikes in a row. Maybe he thought about that. But my grandpa also told me that he had went with, he called him Grady. He said he'd went with him, I think, to Middle Fork. And Grady was preaching out there. And some of Grady's children at that time, they were small. They were with him. And my grandpa, he's a big jokester. And he's all time doing stuff. And one of the youngins was looking back at my grandpa. My grandpa could wiggle his ears. And I can wiggle my ears. And he's wiggling his ears at that youngin. And the youngin got tickled and got to laughing. And Paul said that Grady Minton come down out of the pulpit while he was preaching, grabbed the youngin up, took it outside, wore it out, brought it back in, sat down, hardly even stop preaching the whole time. Can you imagine if somebody done that now? And Dean Earp told me that Preacher Rhonda Earp, his daddy, had done that to him one time.
I saw it here. Really?
Really?
He walked us up here from Liberty Hill School down here during the day, and he was preaching. And a long-legged boy was like cutting up back there in the church. Rhonda preached right down the aisle, got him by the ear, and he just barely touched the floor. He went out the door. We heard him lay it on, came back in preaching right up the aisle.
My goodness, if somebody done that now, they'd be on the evening news. But it might do some youngins good too, I tell you. So I just want to tell you that about what I knew about Grady Minton. But they were faithful in times of discouragement. They were also faithful in small things. Most of these churches, especially in the very beginning, they started really small. You know, just a very few members. I want to read a little bit what he said about Rich Mountain Church. Zechariah chapter 4 verse 10 says, "For who hath despised the day of small things?" You know, the Lord himself only had 12 disciples. You know, I'm sure if Jesus had wanted to, he could have called 1,200 disciples. He could have called 120 disciples. He only called 12 disciples. Small things are not bad. Small things are necessary. The army might have a battalion of 1,000 plus, but the Green Berets is going to be about 12 guys. You know, so everything's relative. If you was going to battle, you'd want the thousands, but you also need the specialized 12. And so, but small things, they're faithful in the small things as well. He talks about Rich Mountain Church. He was called the pastor of the Rich Mountain Church in 1918, and he says Rich Mountain Church is between Meat Camp and Silverstone Communities High on Rich Mountain. I served them 4 years. The people in this community were nice people who made their living mostly farming and raising cattle. The McNeils, the Reagans, the Cullers, and Castles and others lived here. John Beach ran a lumber mill and a power cane mill. That's some of your people, Brother Allen. Mr. McNeil was an active man with his church. Mr. Romulus Z. Lenny was often up here in summertime and lived part of the time up on Tater Hill in a small stone house. Is that who you was named after?
My grandpa was named after him, and I was named after him.
Oh.
It's just a very special name to certain people. That's the reason no other Romulus is running around.
I was going to ask, I seen that name. I thought there might be a connection there. was named after him.
And his name after him.
Yeah.
And then
you was blessed enough to get it. Well, so was Mr. Lenny. So was Mr. Lenny. Because it said that he said, "The sky is blue. If you will paint this church blue, I will pay for the paint."
You see, my problem is I'm colorblind.
Oh. Let's. Uh-huh. Oh. Yeah. Huh. Is that church in the same location it was?
No, the church is in the location where the old schoolhouse used to be, the one thing.
Right. Okay. He said it was hard to travel up on this. Oh, let's see. What did I want to? He said when I first came to this church, it was down spiritually. They had lost interest. They had been greatly neglected, and there was no one to lead a song. I led the singing, did the preaching and praying, and it was some time before I could get the church lined up and get an interest started. I saw a man back in the rear of the church while I was leading a song, keeping time. I soon got him to lead the singing. We were off to a slow start, but later we began having good revivals, and many souls were saved. He said it was hard to travel up on this mountain and hard to come back down, but someone should care for this church, and it fell my lot to do all I could for them. And so he said it was hard to go up there. It was hard to come back down. But he said they needed somebody. And so I'm thankful for people that are faithful in small things. If we have to have a big number to do something, there's something wrong with us. You know, like I was talking about Vacation Bible School, if we had one, we need to take care of one. If we've got 20, we need to take care of 20. They will remember that Mount Lebanon Baptist Church had Vacation Bible School, and they were brought here when they were little. And I've told this story before. Kim, my wife, in her old Bible, she's got a bookmark, and on the back it says it's stamped Mount Lebanon Baptist Church, Vacation Bible School. Kim wasn't taken to church growing up, but she was brought to Mount Lebanon to Vacation Bible School and ended up being the pastor's wife at Mount Lebanon. That's the Lord. Be faithful in the little things. God knows what He's doing. They were faithful in small things. I'll have to move on. How about faithfulness when things go wrong? He's got a chapter in here on being conducting a revival at Mount Vernon. And he talks about going to Mount Vernon. He said Mount Vernon, he tells where the church is located. He got a call to a revival meeting, as near as I can get the date, on January 28th, 1926. The old church stood there then, and G.W. Sebastian was the pastor. He failed to get into this community until the last of the week. I was sick when I went to this field of labor. It was a long, muddy road from the river bridge, so I left my old Model T Ford in Boone and walked out to the church. The meeting began to pick up and souls were saved by the time the pastor came in. The pastor only stayed a day or two until he left me again and went to his church down at Mount Ephraim. I can't imagine going to a church and starting a revival and the pastor not being there. You talk about things going wrong. And I have went to a church to preach before and the pastor not be there. I was on deputation as a missionary and went to a church and I was scheduled to be there and I talked to the pastor and I got there. It was on a Wednesday night and there was some members there, but there's no pastor. And I asked him, I said, where's the preacher? And he said, He went to preach somewhere. He was in revival or something. You talk about awkward. Well, I just went on and preached anyway. But that'd be hard. Of course, they didn't have You know, there's probably good reason why it took him 3 or 4 more days to get there. He was sick when he got there. He said, I preached twice each day. When they had revival services, they'd have a morning service at 11, and then they'd have a night service. And I guess about all the churches done that. And the school would usually let out and let the children come to the revival. My grandpa Greer, I asked him one time, I said, Paul, I want you to tell me about when you got saved. I'd never heard him tell it. And so I was sitting down there with him on his porch, and he said, I got saved up at Brushy Fork. They was having a revival, and they let school out, and they'd went up during school, and that's when he'd gotten saved. Wouldn't school be better if they'd let out for a revival nowadays? But he talks about preaching out at Mount Vernon. He said the attendance was good and the singing was good. At the end of the week, my illness was quite severe, and that voice that I had heard before bid me to go home. So I wrote the pastor a note, and a friend picked me up and helped me to Boone. I got my Ford started and finally made it home. With the help of the doctor and 2 weeks in bed, I barely missed having pneumonia. In this meeting, there were some 6 or 8 saved, for which I still thank God. And so, you know, to me, if you was going to have a revival, that'd be getting off on the wrong foot. You go and you're sick. You go and the preacher's not there. But he went on and he done it anyway. And the farther he went, the sicker he got. And he finally made it back home and stayed in bed for 2 weeks after preaching that revival. And so we need to have faithfulness even when things go wrong. And we've all had things go wrong. And it's when things go wrong, you want to throw your hands up and quit. You know, that could be disheartening. Preacher wasn't even there. I'm sick. What are we doing? He just went on. We need to have faithfulness in times of uncertainty. Now, he talks about going to preach a revival at Watauga Church. And he was called to preach a revival at Watauga Church, which it doesn't say, but I'm supposing that's Watauga Baptist Church because that's the only church I know of out there. But he talks about going to revival. And he said Brother G.W. Sebastian was pastor. This was in 1924 in the first meetings. The narrow gauge railroad ran through this section through the Linville Gap from Johnson City, Tennessee to Boone, North Carolina. And I learned something interesting about that. The narrow gauge railroad, the rails were laid 3 feet apart. A regular railroad, I think it's 4 feet apart. But through the mountains, they made them narrower so the cars could turn and a smaller engine could get up into. So if you go away and you didn't learn anything, you learned what a narrow gauge railroad was.
Daddy said that's why they never built it back. If it had been a regular size railroad, they would probably built it back after the 40 foot.
Yeah.
That's what we used to use as a narrow gauge.
Yeah. He said, I took this train in Boone and was told to get off at Townsend Siding, which I did, but all I could see was a big briar field. I made my way down through this field and came to a public road not far from Watauga River. As I traveled on, I came to a bend in the road and could see a church about half a mile away, which proved to be Watauga Church and the one I was to preach in. The church was large and would seat 400 or 500 people. It is the only church I ever preached in with a pulpit in one corner of the building. The people in the rear of one part could not see the people in the rear of the other part. Has anybody ever heard of Watauga Church being like that? It was in 1924, so I wouldn't expect that anybody would unless they heard somebody talking about it. He said the church was large and would seat 400 or 500 people. Let's see. ran through this section through the Linville Gap from Johnson City, Tennessee to Boone, North Carolina. No, because he says the Grandfather Mountain was in plain view of this church, and many of the members lived around the side of the mountain and some up on the side of it. So it has to be Watauga Church. But it's not the church building now. I don't think you could get 500 people in there. But again, he said, the pastor was late in getting to this field. I had been preaching some 3 days when he came, and the meeting was starting off well. Most any night, these brethren said we had about 500 people. There were many young people in this community. There was a large schoolhouse with 3 rooms and 3 teachers. I visited the school and conducted prayer meetings, and the school turned out for church each day at 11 o'clock hour for service. At this first meeting, there were 17 or more saved, all of which joined the church and was baptized in the nearby river. But can you imagine being called for a revival and getting on a train and saying, get off at this certain place, and you get off and it's just a big briar field and you have to go wandering around through the countryside to try to find where you're supposed to preach? Yeah.
She couldn't take her car
up there. He said, when the meeting was over, I would walk up to Valley Creek Siding, and when I would see the train coming, I would hold my hand up, and the whistle would blow a little to let me know that he was stopping. I would soon be rolling toward Boone. The conductor would say 25 cents, and soon I was in Boone, where I would stay all night and next morning go to Zionville near my home with the mail. Today, I left Vilas, went to Bethel, come down in Cove Creek, went up through Zionville or almost Silverstone, about, you know, 20, 30 minutes. Can you imagine? Just going from Zionville to Fosco was a major deal. And you got to ride a train part of the way. Still had to spend the night in Boone. Faithful, faithful. Faithfulness when you don't even know where you're going. And I've been some churches I didn't know where I was going, but found out. So faithfulness in times of uncertainty. Now, what I want to deal with the rest of the time is not just the preachers, but the people. There's the faithfulness of the people because if you don't have nobody to preach to, you're not going to get anything done. If you don't have anybody to do the work, I mean, to plant a church, you got to have some people. If we look in our little Mount Lebanon book, there's preachers that helped come and organize and start the church, but there was people. And so the people down through the years, I'm thankful for the preachers and what they have done, but I'm also thankful for the people and their faithfulness down through the years. Planning a church, Sunday schools. Somebody's got to teach Sunday school. If you have a church, and most all of these mountain churches that we're talking about only had preaching once or twice a month, you got to have somebody. When the preacher's not there, you got to have somebody that's faithful, that's not going to tear the church all to pieces, that's going to lead singing and work with the choir and teach the Sunday schools and take care of the church, and men in the community that will take care of needs as they come up. You've got to have faithful people to have a church, people that will take their part. I was thinking about when we were members at Mountaindale, and they only had church, they only had preaching one Sunday a month. Well, on those other Sundays, what they would do, people would come to church just like regular, and some of you remember that here, And they'd have Sunday school at Mountaindale. And then they'd let out Sunday school and they'd go back upstairs. And Alfred Ward, he was the superintendent. And a lot of Sundays, he would give a real good message. He would sort of, what they used to call, he would exhort, you know. And we'd kid with him. We'd say, "Brother, you preached awful good. You talk," and he just, you know, a little help along. He wasn't a pastor. He wasn't trying to be the pastor, but just good, godly people that'll be there and be faithful and stand in the gap. You got to have people like that. And so that is something that we need to look at when we're looking at the history of this. Nehemiah chapter 4 verse 6 says, "So built we the wall, and the wall was joined together under the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work." You got to have people that have a mind to work. And I think if there's a drawback to having a full-time pastor, it would be that people begin to depend on them a little too much. If you have a church, which I'm not against that, I think it's a good thing. I think it's a necessary thing in our day and time. But I'll put it like this. When I came to Mount Lebanon, I didn't have to do a whole lot. Meaning that it wasn't that anything was disorganized. I mean, you already had a great Bible school. You already had a great choir. You know, I didn't do these things. It already all been put into place. Somebody been being faithful. You didn't have a full-time pastor. But when I went to Alaska a few years ago and I missed a couple of Sunday mornings and a Wednesday night, I didn't worry myself sick about what's going to happen at Mount Lebanon while I'm gone. There's faithful people in place that can carry on, teach, conduct business, do what needs to be done, even if the preacher's not there. That's worth a whole lot. And so we thank the Lord for that, for faithful people. The work cannot be done by preachers alone. You got to have people. Well, he talks about, and this is what I'm going to deal with tomorrow night. Our time is about done, but I've enjoyed studying about the people as much as the preachers. I want to share some things about what people done to help the preachers and in the church. 1 Corinthians chapter 4 verse 2 says, "Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful." And so you got to have faithful people. Faithful preachers are absolutely necessary, but you got to have the people too. You got to have somebody that'll say, If you'll paint the church blue, I'll buy the paint and all that kind of stuff. You got to have you Romuluses. People like that. All right, there's not enough time to get into anything else, so I'll let you go. I appreciate everybody coming.